Is our criminal justice system out of control? Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk with Jason Pye, that's spelled P-Y-E, of Freedom Works. He's the director of justice reform for Freedom Works. Their website, by the way, is freedomworks.org. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Jerry, for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. So I will ask the leading question to you. Is our criminal justice system out of control? And if so, why?
Well, I think it is. I think we've had decades of sentencing policies and that have largely failed to reduce crime and recidivism. Well, they've failed to reduce crime and recidivism. They have grown out of control in terms of spending. We now spend close to $7 billion a year at the federal level on corrections. The recidivism rate, which is the rate of repeat offenders, is high at the federal level, and that's because we don't have we're not adequately rehabilitating prisoners when they're in the prison system. We have to remember that reentry starts the reentry process for a prisoner starts starts with sentencing. It starts their first day in the correction system. And what we have seen is that at the state level, about 31-32 states have passed justice reform or justice reinvestment initiatives. Reform sentencing policies that institute and implement rehabilitative programming in their correction system, their prison system, to reduce recidivism, and reentry policies that give these offenders a second chance at becoming productive taxpaying citizens. And what we've seen from these state initiatives is that it works. Texas has, in 2007, really started us off. They passed the first in what has become a series of their justice reinvestment initiative, creating drug courts, rehabilitative programming. This was the answer to addressing an out-of-control prison spending problem. They were expected to spend a little over $520 million in 2007 on new prison construction or prison expansion. And rather than spend that money, they invested about $260 million in this new initiative. And it obviously costs a lot less than spending $500 million on new prisons in prison construction. And it was successful over the past since 2007. Texas's recidivism rate has declined by 9%. The crime rate has declined by 21%. And this is all while they have seen a 12% decline in their prison population. Since 2007, they have saved nearly $3 billion in prison spending, expected prison spending. And we've seen other states like Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, Utah, Oklahoma, they have taken up their own justice reform or justice reinvestment initiatives, and they're pursuing massive or significant changes to their sentencing policies. They're instituting rehabilitated programming in prison. They're implementing reentry policies that help these offenders find jobs and opportunities once they leave prison to become productive tax-paying citizens. Georgia, for example, started their initiative in 2007, and they've saved $250 million while seeing crime and prison populations and recidivism decline, which are, again, all very good things. So what we're trying to do at the federal level is bring these policies at the states that from the states that have been so successful in reducing crime, recidivism, and saving taxpayers' money to the Federal Bureau of Prisons, the federal correction system. And we have a couple bills in Congress that would do this, and we're trying to get them over the hurdle and get them to the votes in their respective chambers so we can get final passage and put these bills on the president's desk.
Now, let me ask you this. You said how much is spent annually as far as the prisons and the whole criminal system, because this talking point from your office says that we have a system that touches one in three Americans and costs upwards of a whopping $80 billion annually.
That is for
the entire
state and local.
Federal. Okay, so that's entire system. Okay, and one in three Americans are touched?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are one in three Americans have a criminal record. I mean, that's a significant problem. We have one in three Americans who now have hurdles to finding education opportunities, to finding employment opportunities, to bettering their lives in some way. That's why we're involved. That's why FreedomWorks is involved with this. We see it as good. It's not just good fiscal policy in terms of saving money. It's also gives the whole prospect of second chances. We have a lot of members of our activist community who are who are people of faith, and the entire notion of their faith is based on the prospect of second chances and redemption. And I think that that's why it resonates so much with members of our community. And we have partners who are part of what we do, the Faith and Freedom Coalition, for example, who base their entire message on this, on the faith aspect. I think that, you know, one in three Americans having a criminal record, you got to think about it. It's given at the federal level, we have so many laws. We have so many regulations carrying criminal penalties. There was a professor from Louisiana State University, John Baker, who once said that there is not one person over the age of 18 in the United States who cannot be prosecuted for some federal crime. So we're, in theory, we're all criminals. We just haven't been caught yet. And it can be crimes committed unwittingly. Wow. It can be crimes that, you know, that we knew we were committing. But we, you know, this is a severe problem. We have to get a handle on it. I think that the bills that we're pushing in Congress would start, they bring us, they're a step in the right direction towards addressing what is a serious issue. And sure. Again, it's not just sentencing reform, but it's also that rehabilitative side, getting the programs in prisons to rehabilitate these offenders, to reduce their risks of recidivism so they can come out of jail or prison and find employment opportunities so they can have a family, so they can have a normal life, provided they don't reoffend.
Sure. All right. We're talking right now with Jason Pye, and he is from Freedom Works. He's the director of Justice Reform. I'll tell you, Jason, as I listen to you, I can't help but think of a Baylor professor that I've interviewed a few times, Dr. Byron Johnson, and he wrote a classic book, and he's a great social scientist, and the book is called More God, Less Crime. More God, less God. It's so true, though. But one of the big problems that you see in the criminal justice system as it is right now is the idea, in a sense, of one size fits all. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Yeah. I mean, we look at things like mandatory minimum sentences. They do not give judges, you know, when someone comes into a courtroom and they don't allow for nuance. They don't allow for specific, they don't allow judges to take into account certain situations. It's one size fits all, and that's that. You go to jail for 5, 10, 15 years, this lengthy prison sentence, when still a prison sentence, but a smaller or less lengthy sentence would have been more appropriate.
Yeah. How much of the criminal system is impacted by drugs? I'm sure a lot, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it depends by year, but at the federal level, we look at, I think, anywhere from 48 to 52% of offenders who are incarcerated at the federal level are drug offenders.
What would that actually entail? I mean, in some cases, that would entail the drug pusher, but in other cases, it would just be the possessor? I mean, I don't know. I'm just asking.
About 1% of federal offenders were incarcerated for simple drug possession. Most of them are low-level players in drug rings. There's a couple examples, like Sharonda Jones, for example. She was a low-level player in a Texas-based drug ring. She was given sentencing enhancements for having, and get this, she had a concealed carry license. She didn't have a gun in her possession. She had a concealed carry license. And she was given a sentencing enhancement that put her in jail for life. And she was a first-time offender. Didn't have anything on her record. She was a nonviolent offender. Again, a low-level player. She wasn't a drug kingpin. And she got a very harsh sentence for her role. Again, very low-level role. And that harsh of a sentence for someone like her, it just wasn't appropriate. I mean, again, prison time, absolutely. But a lifetime in a federal prison does not seem appropriate for a low-level nonviolent offender.
Huh. Okay. And as far as the number of prisoners that are actually, you know, incarcerated, I remember Chuck Colson saying before he died, the prison reformer, Watergate, a fellow senior counsel for President Nixon, went to jail himself for kind of Watergate-related crimes, kind of. But anyway, he went on to start Prison Fellowship. And he said, man, when I was in prison in the 1970s, there were about 200,000 Americans who were behind bars. He said now, and this is about a 10 or 15 or 20-year-old statistic, now there's about 2 million Americans. So the number has just skyrocketed.
No, absolutely. I mean, we've seen it's over 2 million right now, taking every state and local and federal into account. It's over 2 million. At the federal level, it's around 200,000. The statistic I like to use when I'm talking about this issue is at the federal level in 1980, there were approximately 25,000 prisoners in federal prison. But when harsher sentencing policies were passed in 1986 and then again in 1994, it took off exponentially, and it grew by about 800% between 1980 and 2013. So we're talking about just an outrageous explosion in the federal prison population. In federal correction spending in 1980 was less than $1 billion adjusted for inflation. I think it's like $926 million. And today, again, it's closer to $7 million. So we're talking about almost it's more than a 500% increase in federal spending on correction.
Well, as some people would say, you know, you do the crime, you pay the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, we're not saying, and no one is saying that people who break the law shouldn't be punished. We wholeheartedly agree with that. But there is this thing, this concept of redemptive justice, and we believe that people who commit crime should have an opportunity to rehabilitate themselves in prison, to lower their risk of recidivism, to have opportunities when they come out of prison to become productive taxpaying members of society. We've seen in Texas, for example, and I point back to Texas often, we've seen in Texas that they've come in and they're giving people who are serving prison time opportunities to get an education. And there's one particular program, and the name of it escapes me, but I've written about it in the past, that has a 7% recidivism rate. Now, the national average...
That would be the the ISI, whatever that's... It's from... Ultimately, it's from Chuck Colson's group.
Right. I mean, Chuck Colson is... Yeah. I mean, he's a hero to us justice reformers, absolutely. He and Pat Nolan.
Interfaith...
The American Conservative.
Interfaith Change Initiative, something like that. That's what it is.
Right.
Something like that. And because I actually did a story about it for Coral Ridge Ministries, now called D. James Kennedy Ministries. But we went to Houston, and, you know, and the great thing about that program is they had volunteers on the outside who would come in. They would mentor the inmates. And then after the inmates were released from prison, those mentors would still meet with those former inmates and help them get a job and all that kind of stuff and meet with them on a regular basis. So they had a beautiful transition back to normal society.
No, exactly. And that's what we want. I mean, we want these people to be able to come into society and have opportunities available to them. This one particular program that I referenced, a 7% recidivism rate compared to a national average of about 40% recidivism rate. That shows tremendous success. And these people are coming out, they're starting businesses when they leave prison, and becoming those productive taxpaying members of society that we want. We have to ask ourselves as conservatives that we have to acknowledge that 96% of people who go into jail are someday going to come out of jail. The question we have to ask ourselves is what condition do we want them to be in? Do we want them to be hardened criminals who are going to come out and be more risk to our communities? Or do we want them to have an opportunity to come out and be a benefit to society, to go out and start businesses or to become successful employees, to be ideal citizens who look on their time in jail as just a mistake they made, but they're better off for it because they have turned their lives around. That's something that I think conservatives really have to consider, and that's something that I've considered. That's something that FreedomWorks has considered. That's something that the other organizations that we partner with have considered. That's something that Senator Mike Lee, who's become the conservative senator from Utah,
I just interviewed him a couple weeks ago. I love the guy. Yeah, he's excellent.
No, he's great. Yeah, he's great, and he is phenomenal on this issue. He is one of the leaders that we have in Washington on this issue. But we look at it. When Texas were doing their reforms in 2007, the chairman of the committee who oversaw it, his name's Jerry Madden, he asked the speaker, he's like, look, we're going to spend another $500 million+ this year on new prisons. He's like, what do you want me to do? And the speaker just looked at him and said, don't build new prisons. They cost too much. And so they came up with this new way, the Justice Reinvestment Initiative. And we've seen the benefits of the states. And again, it's been a wave since Texas. 31 states, 32 states have enacted some measure of justice reinvestment. You have Oklahoma that just got rid of their three strikes laws under a Republican governor and a Republican state legislature. You have Utah, which is Republican dominated, who has passed a significant justice reinvestment initiative. You have a Republican governor in Georgia who has really in some ways surpassed even what Texas has done on justice reform. So we're seeing these issues. The conservatives have led the conversation at the state level. It was even after a lot of states, conservative states like Texas, took it up that even progressive states finally jumped on board with it. We have, a lot of people don't understand, they hear someone like President Obama talk about criminal justice reform and they think, well, we have to oppose it because it's Obama supports it.
Yeah.
These are conservative issues. These are conservative issues that have been pushed at the state level by conservative leaders. They're being pushed in Congress by conservative leaders.
Right.
This is a net positive. There is no splitting the difference on bad ideas here. These are positives to the federal budget. These are positives to our communities. We have seen that they contribute to lower crime rates. We have seen that they contribute to reductions in recidivism, and they save money. And I think the opponents of criminal justice reform, especially those who deem themselves to be fiscal conservatives, really have to consider one question. I have a great, I think it's great because I spent a lot of time writing. I have a blog post this morning at freedomworks.org, specifically pointed at one particular opponent of criminal justice reform where I explain the budgetary implications. At some point down the road, and Jerry, I'm sure you've known this because you talked to Steve Moore and others on some of the issues that face our economy and in the budget. You know, we, as federal outlays continue to grow, and especially as mandatory spending like entitlement reform and debt service continue to become larger chunks of the budget, there's going to be less money we have to spend on things like national defense and federal corrections. You know, right now, roughly 16% of the budget is dedicated to national defense. The remaining 22% is non-defense discretionary spending. But by 2026, all discretionary spending, including defense, will consume 22% of the budget, only 22% of the budget. Everything else will go to mandatory spending.
Wow.
We're not going to have the money available to address, to continue to pay for national defense and to continue to provide for federal correction spending if we don't take on this important initiative of addressing our federal correction system to rehabilitate prisoners rather than locking them up for lengthy periods of time.
All right, Jason, thank you so much for joining us. By the way, the name of that Colson initiative is called Interchange as one word, Freedom Initiative. FreedomWorks.org for more information. Jason Pye, Director of Justice Reform for FreedomWorks. Thanks so much for being with us. All the best. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, Jerry.
Bye. Okay, bye-bye.